this episode of GeoTalk, we take a look at geocaching in the 19th century, we hear about an adventure in Alaska, and we get an update on the New Zealand mega event. All this and more on GeoTalk. Welcome to episode 88 of GeoTalk for June 2012. I'm your host, Darren, from the Spin Doctors. Welcome to the podcast. If you haven't heard us before or been to our website, don't forget to visit, for show notes, geotalkpodcast.com. And if you want to drop us an email at any stage, don't forget our email address is geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. Well, we've certainly got a few things to cover in this episode, and one of the first things that we should cover is Munzees. Now, I know Munzees is sort of a bit of on the periphery for most geocachers, but they're celebrating their first birthday in July, and they're going to be running a number of competitions. But one of the things that I thought I'd highlight is they've just released an offline capability for their Android phones, and they're promising it very soon for iPhone. I haven't had a chance to try it out yet. I know a few locals here in Australia have tried it. I think Davixen and Zelgarith have given it a go and say it appears to work quite well. So that's all good news. And the other thing too is they've opened up premium memberships, which I think they started that about a month or two ago. And I thought I'd dip in and give it a go, and got in the mail the other day a nice little premium Munzee star, which I put out nearby, not too close to home. I don't want everyone to know where I live, but certainly that's out in the field. And I'm starting to come around a little bit more to the Munzee experience. It's certainly something that you can add on to your geocaching experience. And we'll see, 12 months on, it's grown to quite a number, and we'll see what it's like maybe in 12 years' time, when the same point that we're up to with geocaching now. I was at a Geocaching 101 event that I helped coordinate recently here in Sydney, and one of the speakers was from MyTech Australia, which is the company that looks after Magellan GPS units as well as Navman. And during the presentation, they gave a web link, which I can pass on in this podcast. It's for all GeoTalk listeners as well as people who are at the event that I went to, in which you can get 15% off their range of GPS receivers, maps, and accessories. So it's for a limited time, and it will be available through a secret link, which I will give you in the show notes. So to get that link, you must go to geotalkpodcast.com, and in the show notes there will be a link to the offer in which you can get 15% off Magellan gear. And I should say their range of GPSs, I've already reviewed both the 610 and the GC, both great units. One in the GC, the entry level, and the 610, the much higher sort of almost top of the line level, both great GPSs and worth checking out. So head to the geotalkpodcast.com website and you can get a link there to get 15% off their receivers, maps, and accessories. As I mentioned in the intro, we're going to take a look at geocaching in the 19th century. Well, it's a bit hard to do in an audio podcast, but I'll give you a link to a YouTube video. It has been around for a little bit of time now. It's put together by Team Wibble, who are from Adelaide. It's quite a quirky little video they've put together in which the couple use, I think, a sextant to try and go out and find geocaching. I suppose it's not all that far removed from letterboxing, which is where the whole sport sort of, or this activity really came from. Letterboxing started in the UK back in the 1800s, back in the Victorian era, and certainly that evolved or slowly evolved, mainly as an underground movement, and afterwards we ended up with geocaching, which is an adaptation of it. So look, I'll give you a link in the show notes. Check that out. It's a YouTube video by Team Wibble on geocaching in the Victorian days, which brings me to ask, have you seen any other funny geocaching videos? I'd love to get any contributions. Anyone who contributes a link to a funny YouTube video, and we mention it on the podcast, we'll send you out a GeoTalk path tag in the mail. So all you have to do is either email us at geotalkpodcast@gmail.com or drop us a call on 02 800 50 436, from New Zealand. That's +612 800 50 436, and give us a link and why you think it's funny, why I think it's a funny video. And if we mention on the podcast in the next episode, we'll send out a GeoTalk path tag in the mail. And before I go, there's a great article that was featured on Gizmodo Australia just a few weeks ago by Adam Sios, or Kios, who's living up in the Blue Mountains. And it's a really good sort of summary introduction to geocaching, and also to geocaching.com.au, as well as GPS Mission. So some of the different sort of GPS-enabled games that are around the place. Worth checking out. I'll give you a link in the show notes, but you can check that out on gizmodo.com.au. Well, it's time now to head across to New Zealand and catch up with Radio Nut 50, who I believe is just back from a holiday over in Tasmania.
Hi there to geocachers from Radio Nut 50 in Hamilton, New Zealand, with some local caching comment. Now, last year talk, I recorded it while I was in Tasmania, where we were halfway through a work trip with some caching tagged on before and after. We really did have a great time, and the weather didn't treat us too well, though, but it was winter time, of course. Most days were raining and blowing off and on, except for the last couple when the sun finally came out properly. Overall, we found around 80 geocaching.com caches on our trip, and we also managed to log one traditional, a trig point, a couple of frogs, and a gnome on the Geocaching Australia listings, plus attend two really neat events. Thanks, Craig Ratt and Greenish, for arranging gatherings in Launceston and Hobart, and to that bunch of locals in each city who we enjoyed a meal with. Special mention to Adrian, who caches as Budgetass, who came to both events. For our last few days over there, we had a good look around Port Arthur and Hobart, and one of the standout caches is one called South Tasmania. This is a virtual listing at the very end of the road travelling south from Port Arthur, and the listing takes you to a set of steps, down into a collapsed cave, where the sea pounds in through a small hole in the cliff, and it produces a foam really with the look of whipped cream. The path in the boardwalk takes you out over that surge and gives you a really great close-up look. This was one of those places where I was carefully videoing the surge, and then the realisation dawned on me that it was getting time to evacuate and leg it up the platform to avoid getting seriously wet. I did get a little bit, but it was definitely added to the excitement of this off-the-beaten-track feature. Another special find for me was called The Russians Are Coming. It's a hide at a harbour defence fort of the 1880s on a kangaroo bluff above Hobart. This historic site's in really good condition after 130 years, an historic testament to the uncertainties of those days. There's another cache called The Russians Are Coming Too, and it's across the harbour at the matching defence point at Alexandra Battery, which we enjoyed too, but not quite as well preserved as the first one. These again represent the fascinating locations not found on tour guides, but our hobby takes you there. Some may recall that when Butterfly Lady and I visited Australia a couple of years back to attend the first Oz Mega, we brought with us a pair of matching travel bugs, racing zebras. They were released on the same day in the same cache at Dalesford, with a mission to get home to Hamilton, New Zealand as a race, one in Linda's name and one in mine. Well, that race was not all that satisfying for me. While Linda's Zara the Zebra crossed the sea immediately and spent a little bit of time travelling in the Bay of Islands north of here in New Zealand before coming home, my Zeke the Zebra headed immediately for Perth, and it stooged around over there for a while, came back to New South Wales, and then went missing. I guess he really didn't want to come home. This kind of competition is lots of fun, so we decided to do it again. And with the magic of copy TB tags and a trip to the toy shop, Zeke was reincarnated and the pair crossed the Tasman in our bags again. They were released together in a special Antarctica TB transit cache in Hobart, again with a mission to race themselves back to Hamilton. So far both have been uplifted, and Zara's done some dipping in and out of caches in Queensland, but Zeke is sitting in a TB hotel in Launceston. Now, I reckon that Zara needs a long tour of Europe, what do you reckon? Zeke might get a chance then, but who knows? We're not at all competitive, eh? Auckland cachers may recall a couple of caching skills training days that the Tramper Ted team put together in recent years. Well, after a chat at an event with Team Welsh, a few of us decided that these things were lots of fun, and it was a good way to introduce the many aspects of our hobby to new and experienced participants. So we decided we should run another caching skills day, and this time we're planning two. One on a Saturday in Auckland, and the other the next day, Sunday, in Hamilton. That way many will have the opportunity to fit in one or the other into their schedule. This day is made up of multiple workshops on topics like using HTML to list your case, cache placement, averaging waypoints, etc., cacher camo, earth caches, GSAK, smartphones, technology, puzzles, etc. And the presenters are all cachers with lots of experience. One item's a panel discussion where safety aspects are covered and cacher questions will be taken. Do have a look at the newest North Island caches on geocaching.com and see if you can make it to one of these events. They're on August the 11th and 12th, so there's plenty of time to plan your free day. The event's more interesting if we get a really good range of cacher experience to discuss these things with each other. A little while back, a cache was listed nearby our home in a park, next to a building. Our search, like some others, was a little bit unpleasant, as the area around the hide was sadly littered with masses of broken glass. And there was a children's playground adjacent, so these sharp shards of glass were a real hazard. After noting that some other logs also mentioned the mess, we decided to do something about it, and listed a mini CITO event. This is the first one we've ever organised. It was pretty painless. I phoned the local council and they enthusiastically promised a collection of rubbish drums on site. And on the day, a small but hard-working group crawled around and picked up glass. Not a heck of a lot of fun in the task, and at times a bit frustrating, because as soon as you cleared one area you thought you had, you disturbed the ground and some more emerged. We'd listed as, give us 20 minutes of your time, but all stayed for around 45 minutes. And the rubbish drums didn't look very full, but all that went in there was really sharp glass, and when we finished, the kids would be able to play around those buildings again safely. As a bonus, a small group of cachers now have a really satisfying smiley on their logs, and caching's put something back into the community. I'd recommend that if you see logs for a cache near you highlighting a mess, ring your council, arrange some bins, and call of an event. It's pretty easy to organise and really satisfying. Okay, it's time to come to an end to this comment. We're getting pretty close to our much-anticipated special caching tour of Cambodia. We mentioned it a couple of geotalks back. Linda and I are joining in an organised tour to view the temples of Angkor Wat, travelling via Singapore, our first time in anywhere near that part of the world. It's all been arranged for geocachers by geocachers, an opportunity to cache in exotic places while someone else makes all the arrangements. We'll only just be back in New Zealand when it's time to put together a contribution for the July Geotalk, so you'll probably hear of the successes in the land of these poisonous scorpions and snakes and spiders that we're not really used to in New Zealand. So to a quick event roundup in New Zealand. In the North Island, Page NZ, the organiser of our Cambodia trip, has listed an event and called it the Paparazzi. It's a gathering for people who might wish well our party on the morning we fly out on the 7th of July. There's also a flash mob in Auckland on the 6th of August, and a caching skills day in Auckland on the 11th, and Hamilton on the 12th, of course. Both of these have a CITO event listed immediately afterwards as a clean-up you can join in too. The South Island has a weekend for two, an intriguing event listed as a follow-up to a special case called GC352QF, and it's scheduled on the 19th of August. And of course, don't forget to register yourself now for the New Zealand Mega on the 20th of October. With that, it's back to you, Darren.
Well, in this episode of GeoTalk, we got an update on the New Zealand Mega event, and we've actually got one of the organisers here in Australia, Gavin, also known as Red Iguana. Welcome to the podcast.
Good to see you again, Darren, and good to be back. It's only been a couple of months.
Yeah, we met at the Mega event down in Albury. So how are the plans going for NZ Mega?
The plans are coming along really well. We've got a lot of the local organisers on the ground now, working on local activities and all the logistics associated with the event. We've got the sponsors starting to come in. We've already announced a couple, geocaching.com, Telstra Clear and Integrated Mapping. We'll have another couple to announce in the upcoming June newsletter, which will be out within the next week or so as you hear this. Plenty more to come there. We're also starting to announce attractions, so for all those who are looking to spend a bit more time in New Zealand and the South Island, we're starting to arrange discounts of 10 to 20% on some of the great attractions in the South Island. So, no, it's all coming together quite nicely. We've got the registrations of interest and indeed the paid registrations that are starting to come through now. We've got a wide variety of caches from different countries coming. You know, we've got at least 400 Kiwis, 250 Australians have registered their interest, and at least another 50 from countries outside of Australasia.
And you've got some special guests.
And we have got some special guests. Quite a few people know this already, but for those that haven't heard, we've got two of the Groundspeak founders coming down to NZ Mega 2012. We've got Brian Roth and Jeremy Irish. There are probably going to be a few others about as well, so it's going to be a very special mega, I think. If you're thinking about coming over, it's definitely one not to miss.
Now, you mentioned registrations are open, but you've only been taking them for New Zealanders at the moment. When can international visitors sign up and pay up?
That's correct. Initially, we were only handling New Zealand payments, as the GPS Society could only handle New Zealand bank deposits and cheques. We've just finished working through PayPal, so we're hoping to announce, within the next week in the June newsletter, we should be accepting international payments via PayPal. So that will open very soon.
Now, it's a long weekend in New Zealand that weekend, so accommodation could be tight?
Accommodation could be tight. We'll have heaps of accommodation on site, but again, on site is primarily unpowered, so best for tents and unpowered camper vans and the like. If you're looking at a powered campsite, booking a motel room or a hotel room in the greater Dunedin and Mosgiel region, I would recommend getting on to that and booking it sooner rather than later.
Now, I haven't been to Dunedin yet, so I'm looking forward to going down there. My own experience is watching it on the television when there's usually rain going horizontal. What's the weather like in October?
I think New Zealand at any time of year has changeable weather. If you're visiting New Zealand for more than a few days, you'll probably experience a wide variety of weather. You'll have some sunny, magnificent days. You'll no doubt have some cold, chilly days as well with a bit of a brisk wind. So you really need to dress for the environment in New Zealand, but you will have some stunning weather and you will have some not-so-flash weather. So just make sure you, as well as bringing some lighter clothes for potentially warmer days, do bring some warmer and windproof clothes as well. But, you know, spring is often a good time of year. The days are starting to get longer, they're sunnier. But, you know, we can have an Antarctic weather system come up any time. So, as always, be prepared.
Yeah. All right. Now, the two main entry ports into the South Island are Christchurch and Queenstown. First of all, Christchurch, what's the situation like there? I suppose most people ask, is it safe?
Absolutely. It's probably safer than it was back around the September and February earthquakes, basically because most of the buildings that were going to come down have already come down or are in the process of coming down. So you think about it from the other perspective, everything that's left standing now has already been through a hell of a lot in terms of the earthquakes that they've been through. So yeah, in general, Christchurch is actually a pretty safe place to be now. Yeah, we do have a few earthquakes, and if you're not used to earthquakes, the first time you feel one, it'll be a bit of a surprise, but very few of the earthquakes do any damage these days. They're nothing more than a little bit of a shake and rumble, a little bit like the Gippsland one last week
in Victoria. Yeah, we even have them here in Australia now.
Absolutely.
And driving wise, because most Australians will be used to driving at 100 kilometres an hour from point A to B, not the case in New Zealand. How much time without geocaching should people allowed to get to Dunedin from either Christchurch or Queenstown?
Most of the road from Christchurch down to Dunedin is fairly flat and easy driving. 4 hours is a good safe mark. Driving at the speed limit and reasonable traffic on the road with no stopping for caches. It is State Highway 1, there are lots of passing bays and it's not tight and winding road, so it's not challenging road, it's a very easy drive. However, you have got this slight impediment to geocaches driving south called Omaru. And if any of you have had a look on the map, you'll see a number of caches placed there, particularly by Bitsprayer and Drawp. And it can be very difficult to drive past Omaru, so I would seriously recommend you add that into your planning and perhaps stay overnight in Omaru if you can, because there are too many caches there to drive past and just go straight to Dunedin.
And if you're coming from Queenstown?
From Queenstown, it's a absolutely lovely drive from Queenstown. It's about 3 hours from Queenstown into Mosgiel in Dunedin. Absolutely stunning scenery. You know, you'll be starting in the mountains and the lakes in Queenstown and then driving through central Otago, through the likes of Roxburgh, Alexandra, Clyde. Lovely little towns with some fantastic little caches to do on the way. Lovely scenery. It's a beautiful drive, one of the nicest in the country. So almost the sort of drive you'd want to set aside a whole day for and really enjoy it. Take the camera. No, most enjoyable part of the country, that.
And for the families that come along where they don't have geocaches on board, you know, the geo widows and some of the kids that that wear out easily, many things to do in Dunedin?
Absolutely. Dunedin's been promoting itself, tourism, for a long time, whether it's for shopping, wildlife, nature tours. There are lots of different things available. We're starting to arrange attraction discounts for people attending the Mega, so a lot of the attractions we're arranging discounts week before and a week after, so even if it's not for the Mega itself but you want to spend a bit of time around the South Island, we've got discounts already in place for the Orokonui Eco Sanctuary, which is near Port Chalmers in Dunedin. We've also arranged a discount for the Tairi Train Gorge trip, which is a stunning scenic train ride into central Otago, and we'll be announcing more of these over the coming weeks and months so that you can add that to your trip planning. So we want to make sure there's something for everyone. Whilst quite a few of the organisers just go, whoa, it's all about caching, we fully recognise that not everyone's going to be up with caching as hard as some of us are want to do, so we're definitely looking at trying to fit in attractions and other options for those who are looking, mixing up the tourism along with the geocaching.
Okay. And just a reminder for everyone, the dates that it's occurring and where they can find out more information.
It's occurring from Friday the 19th of October through to Monday the 22nd of October. The main days are going to be the Saturday and the Sunday. If you're going to turn up for any days, those are the two main days. Friday's a setup day, Monday's a departure day. Very similar to the two Oz Megas we've had here now. And more information, you can go to mega.gps.org.nz. We've got a lot of pages up there already. All the newsletters are going up there. There's more and more information. We also have a link to our GPS Society forum, where we have a dedicated NZ Mega 2012 forum. If you've got any further questions or issues you'd like to raise, feel free to ask them there.
Okay. On behalf of all the listeners, thanks for joining us on GeoTalk.
No worries. Thanks a lot, Darren. Good to see you again.
Time now to have a look at some of the events that are occurring around the country, and the first one is titled Probably the World's Shortest Event. It's occurring in Adelaide on the 1st of July, and the reason why it's probably going to be the world's shortest event, it's to mark the leap second, which is occurring our time on Sunday morning, so the 1st of July. If you manage to get to that and you then want to set yourself a bit of a record, later on in the day is Freddo's 10 of 10 event, which is also in Adelaide nearby, and it gives you an opportunity to try and find 10 different cache types, because that's actually going to be a CETO event. So if you can attend the event earlier in the day and get to that CETO, you've got 2 of the 10 worked out. You just need to get, traditional, multi, puzzle, earth cache, virtual, forgotten all the rest, but you work it out. Oh, where I go. There's a few others. On the 2nd of July in Canberra is Puzzles and Coffee number 5 with called Hello Goodbye. That's being held by Noinkmeister and the Flintstones. On the 4th of July, also down in Canberra, is the ACT July 2012 Geo Lunch. On the 7th of July is the Barbecue Meet and Greet version number 2 that's being held in Springfield, just south of Brisbane in Queensland. Also on the 7th of July is the Warranora River Expedition Canoe and Cache with a K. It's the acronym spells REC, so a little bit worried about that one. That's being held by Steptoe. That's down on the Warranora River in the southern suburbs of Sydney. On the 8th of July is Kids Love Caching Family Fun Day over in Ipswich in Queensland. And another one in Queensland on the 8th of July is Zita and Enzo Come to Queensland. That's being held in Redcliffe up on the northern outskirts of Brisbane. Then on the 18th of July is the City Cacher Catch-Up, an international affair by Geocaching Brisbane. So there's another one in Queensland. And then just to round off all the events in Queensland, that's where seems to be where it's all happening this month. On the 19th of July is the Holiday Gathering. That's being held by Rise of Five and Mini Maxi over on the Gold Coast down there in southeast Queensland. And to round out the month, 28th of July, Christmas in July over in Hobart by Dippy and the DDTs. So that's all the events occurring in July. And also, I just got a follow-up from James, GC3, who we spoke to two episodes ago. He's got an update on the Big Little event, which you can check out details about that at www.biglittleevent.com. He's just let me know that the GC listing is now up, and the code for that is GC3JC6J. So that's GC3JC6J. And if you want to fire off any questions or send him an email, send James an email, send it to biglittleevent@gmail.com. That's biglittleevent@gmail.com. Well, we've got a few calls on the GeoTalk hotline. The first one comes from Noinkmeister, who is normally in Canberra, but he's down riding a bike in Melbourne.
Hey Darren, Noinkmeister here. I'm down in Melbourne doing the Woodlands 100 series, and was hoping to ring up for this to be a bit of a milestone for my biggest caching weekend when I got to the end. But about five caches ago, doing it on my mountain bike, a stick popped up and got caught between my rear derailleur and the back wheel and ripped the rear derailleur right off. So I'm wondering what I'm going to do. I'm walking the next caches until I get back close to the car. I'll dump the bike. Will I finish it? I don't know. I'll call you back and let everyone know whether or not I bothered to continue on do the rest on foot. Keep up the good work. See ya.
We'll catch up with you in a second, Noinkmeister, and see how you went on that journey around the power trail near Melbourne Airport. Next we go to Zal Goriath, who is in London on his way back to Australia.
G'day, Spin Docs and GeoTalk listeners. This is Zal Goriath calling in from the last time in Europe. Luckily, I come home in a few days' time after basically 18 months over here, and it's been fantastic. Thought I'd just call in for a milestone listing. This week, I hit 1,000 British finds in the United Kingdom, which was quite nice and unexpected. But the big one is that on the 25th of May this year, I hit 2 years of my geo streak, which hopefully now the insanity can end, although someone just reminded me kindly 1,000 days is now not too far away. It may come all undone when I fly home this week, losing the day due to air travel, but I think Blossom's trying to help me out with something in Sydney to keep me going with a mystery gnome or frog at a convenient location. We shall see. Anyway, guys, thanks for the good work again, Darren, and I'll hopefully be catching all the Sydney-siders over the next couple of weeks as I slowly integrate back into Australian caching. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Well, thanks for that call, Zell, and we look forward to having you back in Sydney very soon. And another Sydney geocacher who's currently overseas is Calypso62, who's over in Alaska, and he dropped us an email over on the GeoTalk podcast at gmail.com email address. And he says, hi, Darren, I've been having a great time touring British Columbia, Canada and Alaska, and, of course, picking up a few caches along the way. Today we went on a plane ride as part of a trip to Coldfoot, which is a small truck stop in the northern part of Alaska. For those of you who are familiar with the show Ice Road Truckers, you'd be familiar with the name of Coldfoot. Also, Coldfoot is located just above the Arctic Circle, and as we flew, it was great watching my GPS countdown as we neared this famous latitude and finally crossed it. Now, I studied many maps, and I definitely didn't see that dotted line on the ground that you see on all the maps. I asked the pilot about it, and when we arrived in Coldfoot, he apologized sincerely, saying the flight plan took us between the dots today. LOL, laugh out loud. As this was an organized tour, it had been arranged for us to visit the community of Wiseman and talk to a local about his life, particularly during the winter months where the inhabitants, all 14 or so of them, regularly endure temperatures of minus 40 degrees Celsius. As you can imagine, it's a very hard life. Our plane was due any time to return us back to Fairbanks, so there was no free time to look for the two caches in Coldfoot. Our tour guide, Chris, who was aware of geocaching, having found two himself but had not done it for a while, he realised that I was quite disappointed not being able to search for the cache inside the Arctic Circle. Arriving back at the airport, the plane had not landed for the return flight, so Chris immediately asked if I wanted to do a quick search. Absolutely ecstatic at the prospect, I jumped back into the minibus and we headed for one or two of the caches only 600 metres away. In a one-minute search, the cache could not be located, so Chris said we needed to get back, as we couldn't keep the plane waiting. Again, mass disappointment set in. Returning to the airport, the plane still not returned, so Chris threw the wheel of the minibus over, made a quick U-turn, and we headed for the second cache. The coordinates of this one were spot on, and the magnetic key case was found, extracted, log signed, and returned in 60 seconds flat. I was jumping for joy. I had found Coldfoot Camp Cache GC1VYGB. My previous northernmost cache was Catch Nessie, located on Loch Ness in Scotland. Coldfoot Camp Cache has now taken that honour. I'm still to actually log the find online, as I have quite a few to catch up on. It's difficult getting logging with limited internet access. Anyway, cheers out there in the geocaching community. I look forward to the next episode of Geo Talk. It's from Bruce Calypso62, one very happy geocacher. Well, thanks for that, Bruce, and we look forward to seeing some of your photos when you return back to Sydney. Now it's time to head back to Noikmeister and see how he went on that power trail down in Melbourne.
Hello, Darren. Noikmeister here again. Just remembered to call you back. Kicking back in my hotel room in Albury on my way back to Canberra. Managed to complete the Woodland series, just about, after pushing my bike from cache number 58 through to cache number 80-odd. I was close enough to my car that I decided to go on a detour and push the bike back to the car and chuck it in and do the last sort of 15 or 20 caches on foot, or not pushing the bike on foot. And managed to pick them all up, only to get to the final cache at the end of the series and have a DNF because it's gone. So that was a bit of a disappointment there, but all in all, a very sort of satisfying numbers run and quite a pleasant one too. I've done some power trails that weren't great, but this one's pretty good. Can thoroughly recommend it. So that's my milestone. Biggest number of caches in a day, I think I've just done 88 or 87, something like that. And biggest weekend caching as well. So I think I found over 100 in the weekend. So it's a good milestone for me. Anyway, keep up the good work on GeoTalk. Thanks, mate. Bye.
Well, that's all for this episode of Geo Talk. Just a quick thank you to all the callers who contributed and emailed in for this particular episode. Don't forget, if you want to send in your own email, drop us a line at geotalkpodcast@gmail.com or give us a call on 02-850-436, or if you're calling from outside Australia, it's country code 612-850-436. Until next time, safe geocaching.